in the breakdown. Again, small sample sizes, but progress. I have a typo on the next one. So say GPA, sorry about that. Those are our white students. Two or more races is on the next slide. I will come back to this at the end, but we're gonna jump to where the progress is, and then I'll take questions on all of the GPA stuff at the end.
My turn?
Go for it.
So you all probably know that we have standardized testing that's required by the state of California that the state uses to track the learning progress of our students. In addition to that mandated state testing, we also have every single content area doing their own testing, benchmark tests at the beginning of the year, periodic post-tests throughout the year, so that teachers are able to receive feedback on what students are learning, what they need to focus more on. So I'm just going to give you a quick little overview of what's going on in each of our departments. So in ELA, the SRI test, which is a very standard reading test, was administered in the fall. It will be administered in the winter and spring as well. So the detailed analysis will be in the May report. We want to get the full battery of results. In social science, this year was the first year they decided to use DBQs, which stands for document-based questions. It tests students' abilities to analyze and write based on primary source documents. So this is a pretty standard type of skill-building lesson in social studies, in which students have historical documents. They have to analyze them and then create essentially a 5-paragraph essay. So the department, the social studies teachers all gave their students the benchmarks in October. They will be post-testing in April. For high school, the benchmarks happened over the November, December, and January, and they will also be post-testing in April. So the benchmarks provide the opportunity for teachers to see where do we need to build the skills of analysis and writing, and then they'll work on them over the course of the year. And we hope to see an improvement in April, of course. So we're also thinking that DBQs could be a good assessment for English as well. So our English assessment currently is focused on reading. It doesn't have a writing component. So we're looking to potentially next year add DBQ, combine social studies and ELA skills and analysis and DBQs. Next one. So for world language, in Spanish 1, they received a test to measure their narrative writing skills in terms of vocabulary growth and sentence structure. In Spanish 2, growth in vocabulary development, grammatical structures, and reading comprehension. And they will have post-assessments coming up in April as well. In science, the California Progress Test, which is aligned with the Next Generation Science Standards, there were tests given in August, periodic post-testing throughout the year for a total of 2 to 3 annual assessments. And we're going to go into more detail on that data in just a minute. And then we have our math chair, Mike King, joining us to show you some of the MTDP data. So we're going to really kind of look closer at science and math this time around. Go ahead. So you can see benchmark 1 is the light blue, benchmark 2 is the dark blue. The middle school grades did manage to get through 2 benchmarks at this point, and you can see that there's been growth, even though not all of the content has been covered at this point, but we are seeing steady growth, and we would expect to see more at the final quarter. So that's 6th grade earth science, here's 7th grade life science. And 8th grade physical science. So this testing program is really good because it shows exactly, it is exactly aligned to all of the science standards. So it's really helpful for our science teachers to identify where the students need more instruction to be able to grasp some of these concepts. Okay, we'll go forward through. Biology only has the benchmark right now. The second test is coming up soon. And you can go ahead and go through the rest of them, David. Here's chemistry. And physics. And I'll turn it over to Mike King.
Okay, hello. The MDTP, the Mathematics Testing Diagnostic Project, as a refresher, is a project developed by CSU and UC. And we use it here at OSA for three purposes. One is that we as teachers can look at the results of the test and get a sense of where students stand. The tests are aligned to the state standards, so we can see where they stand in terms of the standards. It also informs our placement of students in the correct middle school or the appropriate middle school class, with the idea being that if a student has already shown that they have mastered all of the material that's going to be covered in the class at the beginning of the year, it probably doesn't make sense for them to take that class, and they can move on to the next one. And we also use it to measure growth over the course of the year. So we give a baseline test at the beginning of the year, and then we give another test at the end of the year. And what I'm going to present here is the baseline test, actually a comparison of 3 years of baseline tests. And you can see there above the algebra one, the dates of these. So in the gray is the test results, the gray bars are the test results from November of 2019. And then the orange is August of 2021, and the red is this year, August of 2022. 2020 is not included here. The results, I think, were anomalous. That test was given remotely. It's the only test that was given remotely. The other ones have been done on campus. So that was the year we were remote, and I think the test results are hard to compare to these. The other thing that's different about these, as you may have noticed, is the dates. So in 2019, we were sort of coming back to the MDTP having given it up, and we came back late. And so our benchmark was already 2 or 3 months into the school year, 3 months into the school year. So it makes comparison a little different. One of the lenses, you know, we might look at this chart through the lens of this learning loss that we hear so much and read so much about. And is there evidence of that here? And I would say that it's not clear. The results are a little mixed. On the one hand, you can see that in 2019, the benchmark, the baseline scores were higher than they have been the last 2 years. On the other hand, that was given in November, so the students already had some material and had already learned some of the content, and you would expect their scores to be higher in 2021, in November than in August. So that muddies the picture a little bit. I just looked right before this meeting started. I went back and checked what happened at the end of the year in 2019, 2020 versus 21, 22. Did those students catch up? Because they start, you know, the August comparison. And in fact, they did not catch all the way up. So although you might say this difference is due to it starting in November, it may not be entirely due to that. So I'm very curious to see the results of this year, what happens, and have, you know, another data point to compare and see how much catching up are we able to do by the end of the year. But in any case, if you compare these, you see that in some years, students, like, for example, in Algebra 1, are stronger or as strong the last 2 years than they were in 2019, even though they took the test a couple of months earlier. So yeah, that's an overview. And then we do have a comparison here of IEP students. We have in the past, and I will have this as well tonight, have some breakdown by ethnicity. And then the board asked last year, can we add IEP and 504 to that? I have IEP here. I did not have the 504 list in time to prepare for this meeting, but hopefully we can add that for the end of the year. But we see here that the IEP students are performing very well on the MDTP test compared to everybody else, in many cases stronger. And then this is new here. This is something we're adding this year, which is, these are box plots. This is in the sixth grade curriculum and taught again in algebra. And I said, well, why not add some of the stuff that I teach kids in sixth grade to this presentation. So box plots, for those who don't remember their sixth grade math, are showing quartiles. That line across the middle of the box is the median score. And that means half of the scores are higher and half of the scores are lower. And then the top of the box is the 75th percentile, meaning 25% of the scores are higher and 75% are lower. And the bottom of the box is the 25th percentile, meaning 75% of the scores are higher and 25% are lower. So what this does is give a little bit more detail than just an average. The charts you saw previously were averages. Looking at the box plot gives us a sense of the distribution. And so it's more informative in that way. And I think I'm really looking forward to comparing at the end of the year, because when we do an end of the year comparison on box plots, we can see whether, there's a group of students that are improving and another group that's being left behind. In other words, what if the average is going up because only students who are in the upper half are doing better, but the students who are in the lower half are not improving? We'll see that in the box plots. I'm looking forward to seeing that. And this one that you're looking at here is, these are sixth graders taking the seventh grade readiness test at the beginning of the year. All these tests are given at the beginning of the year for the class that they would take the following year. And so if you look at the percentages and they look kind of low, well, they haven't actually taken the course yet. So they wouldn't really be expected to know this material yet. And it's just given a benchmark and we can see what it looks like at the end of the year in comparison. Also, the MDTP test is designed such that, like, you can be proficient in all the topics with about 65% correct. So it's not like a 65% is like a D as it might be in a grade book.
Thanks, Mr. King. I was asked to give an update on our academic and student success goals that were laid out in the charter. It established goals for the 18-19 school year. So there's no way to look at these goals without considering remote learning for 18 months. But I think in most of the goals we're going to go over, we're still relatively on track. The first was to reduce its failure rate in 9th and 10th grade language arts to below 10%. when this was originally written, 4.3% of the students failed English 9 or 10. Good news, we're still under the 10%. Bad news, it did increase to 8% last year. So knowing that was coming, even looking at the schedule for the previous year from 8th grade into 9, and the rate of 9th graders had failed the previous year, we built in English recovery into our master schedule. We're looking at doing the same also for other classes in the master schedule for next year to get that 8% number not only down in terms of what students are needing in their first round of English 9 and 10, but to reduce the need of credit recovery for English. So 8% will hopefully not be the number next year. The next goal is around eligibility. So the eligibility for 80% for middle school, 90% for high school, it changed a little bit when this was written. Eligibility, I believe, was just at the 2.5 and not the NCs weren't included. The eligibility for semester one this school year was 88% for high school, 79% for middle school. I'm sorry, 79% for high school. So we're actually not quite where we want to be. This again is part of what the student support team and the teachers do following every single GPA report that we saw earlier. We look at the students who are failing more than one classes, work on intervention plans, work with the teachers and the student really to drive their own just accountability and improvement and building in the academic support that they need. So hopefully the quarter eligibility report will hopefully be better than what we ended with this semester. Next one is attendance. Again, such a different goal set before times, 95% overall was the terms for the charter. It was 94% in 18-19. 21-22 school last year has been slightly lower, but the chart is there to kind of show you where we were at pre-remote learning lifestyle to where we were last year. So it's a little bit spread out around periods. Getting to school obviously is always a situation, but where we are on our average was around 94.9. Last year, we ended on 94.21. So overall, high ADA, but not as high as we'd like it to be. I think there's a next one. 98% of our graduates, as I mentioned before, we hit 96 this last year. And the next one. Suspension rates, the goal was to have less than 2% on an annual basis. We were below that 2% in 18, 19, and 19, 20. Unfortunately, 21, 22 last year was a high of 4%. But I include those others just because that was an outlier year without going into too much detail there. So working to keep that down. It's also exploring just a lot of alternatives to suspension and improving our restorative justice processes at OSA. I think there's one more. Parent guardian access to PowerSchool, goals to get everybody on that, looped into what students are doing and their attendance and communicate with teachers. Last year, we had 76% of parents using that platform. I think that's okay. CASP, lots of data. Lots of data in this presentation. Presenting data on Zoom is not my most favorite thing, but I do love looking at student data. So the goal too is to get this all living in one place soon so you can see it as we keep going. So this is the test from last year in the spring. This is our 6th, 7th, and 8th graders and 11th graders. What you can see overall is OSA compared to OUSD. We are exceeding OUSD in English and math. 60% of our students met or exceeded those standards and 36 for math compared with the district, which is 35 and 25% respectively. So compared to OUSD, we're doing really strong in our testing or what test assessment is showing. The next one shows us OUSD compared to the state. So the orange band across the bottom is always gonna be standards not met. We wanna see more in the blue and the green. We're pretty comparable around the math for the state. Definitely far improved on the English standards in terms of more of our students meeting or exceeding the standards statewide. There's some breakdowns on the next one. This is probably hard to read, but this is just broken down into Hispanic, Latino, two or more races, white students, and Black and African-American students. You can see that this mirrors also state data. Our white students are outperforming. There is a need to support our Black and African-American students, certainly in grade 11. You can see here for English language arts, that number of students not meeting the standard. This is also, I think, a benchmark because old CAS data really is sort of no longer relevant in terms of what students are now, where students are now at. So I think like the seventh grade, for example, is really telling because those seventh graders last year, current eighth graders, they were the babies that came back that March, and from we brought them back early from remote learning. And they really have been on campus the longest, but also working with a team that had kind of made that effort to get them back in school as soon as possible. So just looking at these students, if you look at the column on the far right, that's all grades combined for the demographic. So this is for English language arts. The next slide is going to be the same with math. Again, math, far more students not meeting the standards when compared to English language arts and supporting students and looking at our infrastructure around supporting Latinx and Black students to meet the standards. There's an anomaly there. I don't know what happened to sixth grade. It wasn't on the dashboard, but I'm gonna try and get that fixed there. But overall, you'll see the trends and where we need to really focus our instruction and support. I think there's maybe, so where do we go from here? So course feedback, I think, was actually a really useful tool this year to see where students were at and what they were actually experiencing versus what shows up on, you know, a report card. It was also a good practice for us to look and just understand student thinking and provide coaching for our team in terms of assistant principal, JEDI coordinator, pathway coordinator. We're really able to get better supports for student, for teachers there and teachers who wanted to ask for help. I think it was a way to also open that up in a way that was not at all evaluation based, at least I hope. GPA data monitors student performance. We really need to look at that more and more as a team. We do informally every quarter and every semester, but really looking at where the needs are for intervention. Also really want to use the CAS data and our academic data to identify like what intentional intervention looks like in changing our academic support structure, really improving our literacy support and our math support for next year. That's where the MDTP and SRI are kind of assessing impact in long-term growth. But I think the immediate intervention is where we kind of need to really focus to sort of support students who really did struggle from that remote, the gap year. Our current 11th grade, for example, I think is going to be a really good test to look at the CAS data for the current 11th grade, because those are the students who really did miss the onboarding to high school. And I have a guess that it'll probably mirror sort of where the GPA data is looking right now for our current 11th grade, and just in terms of student need and credit recovery. Again, looking at this, we see the white students continue to perform at a higher rate on standardized testing. Looking at standardized testing as a team, maybe one step to look at that in preparation for the tests that are happening in April. And then really using this data to inform our instruction for lower performing students at individual levels. We do a really good job at providing individual support plans, and we need to start looking at it less individualized maybe, but more like collaborative in terms of sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, really providing sort of more access to support our individual students. That I think is the end of the slides. Questions?
Before we take questions, we have to go to public comment. And while I'm going to ask for public comments now, please raise your hand or write your name in the chat. I want to thank all of the presenters this evening. Thank you for all of your hard work putting the data together. It's not easy on Zoom to present academic data, and let alone this volume of academic data. So thank you all for your efforts and your preparation. So do we have any public comment on this presentation? Okay, I don't see any public comments, so let's go to board questions and comments. Board members?
Hey, Sabrina, this is Duane. I'll go. And Ms. Zog, there was, in the presentation, you had mentioned the alternative, I believe, to suspension or something of that nature, but you were saying the restorative justice is starting to get kicked off. So in this interim period, what are you and the staff doing as the alternative round?
I want to clarify, it's not that it's just getting sort of kicked off. It's been in place, but we need to establish the culture and embrace more family mediation, student mediation. That's definitely shifted this year. Dean Jackson's done a good job with a lot of family outreach. Okay. In the interim, we have a suspension prevention team that has come together. We've had a higher number of suspensions related to drugs and alcohol, looking at prevention also through harm reduction, increasing the wellness center options. I really want to get the wellness center off the ground in terms of alternatives to suspension around substance abuse. What's the root cause around substance abuse?
Thank you. That's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Duane. Other board comments or questions?
Boiling. So I think what an amazing report and just fantastic outcomes, just such a bright spot, our teachers and how our students are responding to their instruction and just how comfortable they feel in the classroom, that you should all be very, very proud of that. One of the things that I, would recommend for going forward, and I've mentioned this before, but I think, just to really emphasize, I think it matters a lot, socioeconomic status, and really measuring that, including that all of these reports. It matters for our funding, both the government funding, our ability to raise money on the with the foundations. It matters, obviously, in terms of outcomes, or at least we need to be asking ourselves if it matters, right? I suspect it does. You know, there we think that, I mean, I think a reasonable guess would be as we join sort of the lottery and the OUSD system for enrollment, we're going to look more like OUSD student body, which is very different economically than OSA has been in the past. And so if we're not thinking about that constantly and figuring out like, how do we, you know, adjust our program, adjust our resources to really embrace that, I think we're doing our students a disservice. So I would just say, I think that that would be something to like focus on and to put into our reports. And then, you know, and I just love that we're doing this at all. You know, I just want to reflect on like 4 years ago when, you know, Katie maybe was the, you know, Katie and Mike and Michael King were probably the only ones geeking out over these numbers, right? Like, you know, there was just a small group. It was not something that the whole school was really, you know, embracing and thinking about and trying to figure out how do we do this better and how do we resource it better. And so I want to, you know, just really congratulate the whole team for, you know, setting up the systems to make this all possible. Thank you.
Thank you. The benchmarks across content areas, I just want to say like, just a big appreciation to department chairs and to Mike, like this was a project he started, I picked up. Rachel's been also like now really supporting to get it off the ground, but it's something that I think we'll now be able to improve now that we've been through this pilot year across all content areas. So it's been a huge lift across multiple years. And can I let him respond to these things? I'm just going to dive in. Yes. Most of you guys know I'm moving into the enrollment position next year. Where I think we actually are going to capture different data upon registration, which will also kind of change some of this reporting. Because some of the things you mentioned, Wai-Ling, are not capturable because we're not asking parents the right questions. And we need to ask them in a way that also they want to answer. But I think improving our registration will be part of that.
Other board questions or comments? Okay, I did have a couple of comments. One is that it's so much work to pull this report together that I think it's really important to find multiple uses for it. So, I mean, I think it would be fabulous to, you know, take some of these snapshots, not the whole report, but put it on the website if we're not already showing some of these academic data. The other thing I think would be extremely useful is to be able to like pull out some of these data points and include them in our grant writing and in our pitches. And we could make, you know, a few different cases. We could make a case around the learning loss, and we see that in the data. We can make a case around the achievement gaps and going after resources to support academic support for, you know, for certain populations of students that are in that opportunity gap. And so I think it's really important to leverage the data. And we can do that in at least those two ways that I just mentioned. But, you know, I really want to be able to leverage, you know, all the work that went into the report and to find different ways to use the information that helps to tell the story. Because this is part of the storytelling that we were talking about earlier. It's just a different kind of slant on it. And then also, if you could just send the report to all the board members, because it's also hard to digest all this data in one presentation. So I think, you know, it would be great to be able to look at it a little bit longer and maybe, you know, come back, you know, later if there's additional questions or if we want to have more conversation about any aspect of the report.
Absolutely, I can. And I think it's actually helpful to dispel the myth that our academic program isn't as strong as our arts program, if we did put some of this data on the website. So I think that's a good idea.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you again, everyone, for the presentation. So we're going to move on now to the next agenda item, which is the proposal for the executive director contract. And I want to just introduce this item by referencing the general email that was sent out, that was sent out by me to the large OSA community about the change in the board's plan around how to arrive at a decision or a proposal for our executive director for OSA. And I want to say that just from my own family experience, we have lived through every executive director since Don Harris. And, you know, this decision does not come in a vacuum. And so the board has taken, you know, has taken up the process of evaluating the interim executive director, Mr. Oz, and also evaluating all of the other circumstances in terms of the context in which this decision is being made. And so there's economic issues, there's demand issues, there's market issues, there's equity issues, there's the situation that we've all experienced over the last year and a half in terms of OSA's journey and progress. And my email outlined a number of different factors and accomplishments that we are attributing in part to Mr. Oz's leadership. And I just want to acknowledge as we come into this discussion that, you know, we are very appreciative of his leadership and the way that he came into this interim position. And that was not an easy situation or an easy decision. And it was pretty much a pretty intense pressure cooker that we've all been through. So I want to just put that out there in terms of introducing the item. And because there are, you know, a number of different requirements associated with executive compensation as it relates to nonprofit organizations, we have some process that we need to follow here in addition to our normal Brown Act public meeting requirements. So at this point, I need someone to make a motion and then there will be a second. I have to read out the details of the terms of the contract. Then we will have public comment. Then we will come back and have board discussion and then we'll take the board vote. That's the way the process has to unfold. So I will entertain a motion yes.
Sorry to interrupt, just for clarity, the motion is to approve the contract or what is the motion that you need?
The motion is to approve the contract.
Okay. Okay, I motion that we approve the contract for Mike Oz as executive director.
I'll second.
Thank you, Jason, and thank you, Dwayne. So now let me read this, the terms. A motion has been made and seconded regarding approval of an employment agreement with Mike Oz, who is currently employed as OSA's interim executive director. Pursuant to Government Code 54953, Section C, a summary of compensation must be orally reported prior to taking final action. Pursuant to the motion, a new employment agreement with Mr. Oz to serve as OSA's non-interim executive director is to be entered into commencing March 1st, 2023 through June 30th, 2026. And under that agreement, Mr. Oz will receive an annual salary of $220,000, a one-time signing bonus of $20,000, and will be eligible for potential annual bonuses in each school year based on criteria to be set by this board, increasing over the term of the agreement from a maximum of 5% of base salary in 2023-24 to a maximum of 15% of base salary in 2025-26. Mr. Oz will also accrue up to 20 days of paid vacation per school year and be eligible for other benefits on the same basis as other non-represented year-round OSA employees. The full text of the proposed agreement has been made available for public review as part of the posted material for this board meeting. So now we will take a public comment on this item. So if you'd like to make public comment on this item, please either use the raise hand function in Zoom or write your name in the chat. David, are you signing up for a public comment?
I am.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Apologize, I have notes written now, so I'll be reading from my notes. I felt compelled to speak to the board to express how much I'm appreciating Mr. Oz in his executive director role. For a bit of context, you may or may not be aware, I've been with OSA as of March for 20 years, halfway through the first year. I'm currently the director of technology and a parent. Prior to Mr. Oz, I've been through a total of 7 executive directors, full and interim. In my experience with the various leadership styles and personal aptitudes, I'm finding Mr. Oz's approach to this role both refreshing and inspiring. In the months since Lisa's abrupt departure mid-year during the 2021-2022 school year, Mr. Oz has proven to be a leader who can collaborate with all stakeholders, maintain a focus on the big picture while addressing the short-term situations which arise, build effective partnerships in the community, innovative ideas for solving issues, and bring in funding when needed. I've enjoyed working with Mr. Oz during the time he's been at OSA. I feel his experience as a faculty member, dean, assistant principal, high school principal, and OSA parent all play a crucial role in providing him an individually unique ability to successfully implement OSA's mission and vision. I would like to advocate for his full support by the board, both in the short term and long into the future. Thank you.
Thank you, David. I also see Philip Green.
Yep, thank you. I just wanted to say that as a parent of a 10th grader who entered in seventh grade, you know, sort of at a time of a lot of crises, you know, I really wanted to speak on behalf of Mr. Oz because I think that how people show up in times of crises are really revealing in terms of their character, in terms of always, you know, advocating for transparency, in terms of always making sure that everybody feels seen and heard, and navigating what these last few years have brought has been a huge challenge for everybody, for Mr. Oz, for the school, for the board. I was greatly encouraged with the changes in the board over the last couple of years, and actually was really encouraged when you guys announced that you were going to sort of take a more long-term approach to trying to find a solution for the position. But then when the board chair wrote the letter kind of outlining the reasons why, and it was pretty clear that we've had the answer sort of right under our noses the whole time, I just thought, absolutely, this makes perfect sense. And anyway, this parent, you have my full support. So thank you.
Thank you, Philip. Yep. Any other board comment on this? I mean, not board comment, any other public comment on this issue? All right, board discussion and our board comment. Yes, Isaac?
I've known Mike for several years, but I've only been a board member for a short period of time. But in that short period of time, I've really come to appreciate the, I guess, the breadth of effort and reach that Mike has taken, takes this executive director role on. I think as we were speaking earlier about advancement, you know, that's one way that I've been directly involved with Mike, and to see kind of the effort that he's making with the broader Oakland downtown community to advance the interests of OSA has been, you know, really impressive, and I think is worth noting. I know that many people on this at this meeting, both on the board and members of the community and faculty, see, and which I don't see, are Mike's efforts, you know, within the four walls or the many, many walls of the multiple facilities we have that make up our school. But there is a lot that I've seen outside of the school, and I wanted to make sure that that was noted.
Thank you for that comment, Isaac. Other board comment or discussion?
Mason? I'd like to add also, I just want to speak to the level of appreciation that I have for Mike Oz and the work that he's done over the past several years. We all know this has been a difficult time, not just at OSA, but all around within our local community and nationally. He's shown himself to be compassionate with staff and with students, just a great human being to deal with. When we've seen his interactions and the thought process that he goes through to make decisions, he's also got a deep understanding of the school and the needs of the students in the school. And I think that, Mike, you provide to our school something very special that for a long time can not just provide stability, but also, you know, help to keep OSA the amazing, special place that it is. So I just want to extend congratulations. And I think we've got somebody who's going to leave OSA for a long time and do great work.
Thank you, Jason. Other board comment or discussion? Yes, Wyling?
I have a comment. So I want to really appreciate the comments of the COSAPS members who came and read their letter today and you know, assure you that it was very much our intention when we asked Mike Oz to step into the interim position to do a full search and a full, you know, process and a community listening process. And I regret that we didn't do that. And anything I could say about why would just be an excuse. But we find ourselves at this moment where, you know, we've everything that Josefina said in her letter, where we have seen just what an amazing job Mike has done over the last year. You know, stepping into this role, and it's a crazy job. It really is. You know, you have to start with the only people who are eligible for it are educators, right? And then you have to add on to that that they also are political lobbyists, and they're also real estate agents, and they're also, you know, DEI specialists. And, you know, there's just so many layers of skills that you have to do this job. And I think that what, you know, what people have said, I too am a parent who has been at this family, has been at this school through four executive directors. And, you know, I was very much moved by the teachers who came to us and said, you know, we would want to have a process. We would have want to had a voice in this. All of you have taught my now, you know, freshmen in college since sixth grade and, you know, have helped help them develop as a person, and my younger student is still here. And I really respect, you know, the work you've all done as teachers with my two students, and I respect your view. And I, you know, obviously we can't make that decision today, but I would recommend strongly to the rest of the board that we actually do that listening process now. You know, I know that Mike Oz is somebody who wants to hear feedback and wants to hear ideas and wants to be an inclusive leader. And, you know, I very much want to hear what people have to say about what they want to see in an executive director and what they want to see in the future of this school. And so I would strongly recommend that to, you know, to the board that we do what we should have done a year ago now, so that COSATs or students or, you know, the PTSA, you know, people who want to have a voice in how the school gets shaped going forward can have that now. And I really do think that this is the right decision. You know, I'll add one more thing that, you know, what really kind of made me decide that, like, we just really didn't, we can't go backwards and we can't start a process now that wouldn't, we wouldn't risk, you know, sort of not taking advantage of what we have right before us. You know, one of the things we had to do through this process is look around and see, you know, what's out there, right? There are multiple ED jobs that are open right now in schools. And, you know, I think that we have a real catch here. And I think OSA needs the stability, but we also need our community to be able to really, you know, thrive going forward. And so I'd like us to really work together on how to do that. So I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you, Eileen, for those comments. Any other board comment? Okay, then we will call the vote. We'll call the roll call. So please indicate your name and the vote as we proceed with the roll call vote. Isaac Abid.
Yes.
Thank you. Jason Ryman.
Yes.
Thank you. Wiling Huber.
Yes.
Thank you. Dwayne Walton.
Yes.
Thank you. And Amy Amand.
Yes.
Thank you. And Josefina Alvarado Mena, I vote yes also for the record. Congratulations, Mike.
Did Sorrell vote?
Oh, I'm sorry, Sorrell. I did not call you. Sorrell.
I vote yes.
Thank you. I'm so sorry. No problem. So the motion passes. I want to congratulate Mr. Oz. Thank you for all of your hard work to get to this point, and we look forward to working with you in the future. I think Wiling made a fabulous point. I think that we will create opportunities to hear from all of the stakeholder groups as we move forward. And the thing about leadership is it never stops. So this is just another beginning, but not meant to be the end of the ongoing kind of program improvement work that the whole school is engaged in and will continue to be engaged in at all levels of the organization. I want to ask, Mike, do you want to say anything before we move on?
Sure. I want to take some of the blame for the board too. I don't mind being transparent. I'm often overly transparent. I was at a pivot moment where I was considering other options. This job has been really taxing, and I was being recruited by other organizations, some of which that looked appealing. This is the time where I need to move if I was going to do it. And I went to Josefina and said, I need to know what's happening here because I can't sit and wait and miss these opportunities. And I appreciate you, Josefina, and I appreciate the board for hearing me. I felt that if there was not something shared with me, that I was getting a little taken for granted. And I was honest about that. I also wanted to make sure that if I was going to stay here, it was a really strong commitment. I love this place. I don't think anyone questions that. My question is, how much can I sustain? You know, and it's a crazy job. And that's part of the three-year contract that I'm happy about, is I can really think long-term and know that I really want to be here and see the efforts that we currently have in motion come to fruition. So for those of you here, those of you that work at OSA, just know, like, I'm 100% on this place, and I really appreciate the opportunity. I appreciate the board giving me the opportunity to stay here. 17 years in at this point, so these 3 years will mark years 18, 19, and 20, and who knows what will happen after that, but I'm just grateful to be here. So thank you all.
Thank you. So we're moving on our agenda. The last item on the agenda is the second interim report. Do we have that for this agenda? I don't see Susan here. Anyone have an update on that agenda item?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I know David has the report itself, and then I know both Amy and I are prepared to speak to it. Sorry, with everything else we've just been through, it's hard to refocus on a second interim report. Amy, do you want me to take the lead and just kind of share where we're at?
Yeah, I mean, I'll share as chair of the finance committee. Mike, Susan, and I met a few days ago and reviewed the second interim report. I know Susan has submitted it to OUSD, and we must move to approve it now. So Mike, if you want to go over the contents of the report.
Yeah, is it? I don't know if you have it readily available, David, but I can give you guys an easy summary while we're looking. We're currently looking at a $200,000-ish dollar deficit for the year. That's with the most conservative of estimates on attendance. As you all know, we started the year with a budget reflecting an attendance of 800 and attendance rate of 94%. We're currently at 760 students. I'm happy to have a much longer conversation about all that. I'm not thrilled about where we're at, but I do have context for you. I think that we have a few dials and levers to turn and hope to not dip into reserves. And I've shared all those in detail with Amy. We went through line by line by line of the budget. The people who have listened to my presentations who work at OSA know I'm desperate to turn a balanced budget this year. And I still think I remain hopeful and know that there's going to be some challenges to make sure that we can make the adjustments we need to get out of that current $200,000 deficit that's reflected at second interim. I also want to point out on the attendance, this is not excuses, but it's important to know the conditions. Charter school enrollment is down 8% on average, and we're down about 2.5%. So it's not to say that there's not room for improvement, but the challenges we're facing are not unique to OSA challenges. This is the state of education challenges. I'm sure the educators in the room are aware. Another thing I'd like to point out is the one-time funding that a lot of schools have actually front-loaded and put into the current school year. I know the board knows my strategy has been to divide that amongst the terms of each of those funding sources, and we're very intentional about that. So there is one-time funding that we still have available, but we're trying to not dip into that for programmatic needs at this point, but I want to share that context as well.
Can anyone share the second interim report?
I can dig it up if it's not readily available to David. Do you need me to do so, David?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
I don't have a copy of that.
So once we see it, we'll take public comment, and then I'll entertain a motion to accept the second interim report, and then we can vote on it, and that'll be our last item for this evening.
Okay, I think I can do it now. You guys are going to be scared when you see how many tabs I have open.
Try not to look at that.
Yeah, I know. Okay, can you see that?
Yes, maybe make it a little smaller on your screen because it's kind of overflowing.
Yeah, let me stop share while I dig into that for a second, if you don't mind.
Oh, that's fine.
I need to just open it with Google Sheets and... Okay, I'm going to go to the summary page and share that.
Sounds good.
And hope that I don't get snowed on tonight on my way home. So here's a summary page, breakdown of all the particular object codes, the first interim budget, our actuals through 131, and then the second interim, which, as Amy had shared, has been reviewed by OUSD and already been supported, which is kind of our litmus test. I am fine. Pausing before I scroll down, I think the bottom line that I described is probably something that people want to see in actual numerical form as well. You want to just let me know, Josefina, when you want me to scroll down?
Yeah, I think you can scroll down. And if board members want to look at this top part for any further, just stop me. But I think we can have Mike scroll down.
And the one other area I think I'd like to draw attention to is our legal expenses last year were so significant. It was $450,000. This year we budgeted 240. I had a pretty strong commitment to making sure we minimized all, legal expenses. We're actually far below that, but we decided to keep that in there just in case we want to prepare for the unexpected. So we're hoping at the end of this that there's a good savings on the legal expense end too.
Well, that could help balance our budget.
Yeah, it'll take care of a piece of it if things go as planned. I don't want to jinx anything. Mm-hmm. And I want to point that out. That's not with reduced legal needs. The legal needs are just as significant this year because we're actually, dealing with the impact of a lot of the things that had occurred last year. So here's the bottom line here. We're at this $212,000 deficit, dials to turn, but still lots to make sure we can have happen, including that $1.3 million fundraising target. So we've got a very stressful and busy 3 months ahead.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Just to underscore the point, I know that we went past it already, but the revenues, the enrollment numbers, that difference was also 200,000. So there's lots of moving parts and line items moving, but it's like big picture enrollment, you know, was a revenue hit. So all the work that Katie and Mike are doing on enrollment right now and, you know, getting ready for next year is super important.
Yeah, from the first interim budget, it's actually a $360,000 difference on state aid through LCFF. Mm-hmm. Okay. The current, I guess I'd say one more thing. Sorry, Josephine, I know we're dying to be done.
That's okay.
The numbers we put in reflect today's enrollment, but the money at the end reflects every single day from beginning till now. So it's actually a more conservative estimate at this point, but I felt compelled to put it that way.
Okay, thank you. Let me ask if there's any public comment on this item. Okay, I see there's no public comment. So I will entertain a motion to accept the second interim report.
I'll move to approve.
Thank you, Amy. And a second?
I'll second the motion.
Thank you, Isaac. any board discussion on the item? Okay, no discussion, so we'll go ahead and call the roll call vote. I'm going to start with Sorrell this time since I almost left you out last time.
I vote yes.
Thank you. Dwayne Walton?
Yes.
Thank you, Dwayne. Wylene Huber?
Yes.
Thank you. Jason Ryman?
Yes.
Thank you. Amy Omond?
Yes.
Thank you. Isaac Abid?
Yes.
Thank you. And yes for me as well, Josefina Alvarado Mena. So with that, I'm going to adjourn our meeting for tonight. Thank you, everyone, for participating in the meeting. Thank you for all the public comment. And we will see you all in person for our next meeting. Take care, everybody, and stay safe. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.